This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Total Saints podcast. We are the weekly Saints podcast, your home for all things Southampton Football Club. This podcast is being live streamed on YouTube, Facebook, X and on Twitch. So good evening if you're watching along live. Our podcast is supported by our loyal Patreon community. And without you, we couldn't make this show each week. So thank you as always. Coming up this week on the podcast, Flynn Downs may have scored one of the most important goals of the season against Watford on Saturday. Is it back on? That's the first thing we're going to be discussing this week for sure. The new wave of positivity is only possible because of the win over Coventry in midweek, so we'll briefly look back at that game as well. And it's another big 7 days with 6 points up for grabs. The rearranged Preston North End game is on Tuesday night, followed by a trip to Cardiff at the weekend, so it's going to be a busy episode. My name's Martin Stark, and joining me this week are Steve Grant, the owner of Saints Web, Alfie House, who is senior Southampton reporter for the Daily Echo, and Glenda LeCour is writer of the blog League 1-10. Underpinned by our TSP patrons, this is episode 273 of the Total Saints podcast.
Your home for everything Southampton FC, from dedicated Saints insight to exclusive interviews. Live on YouTube every Sunday and available to download wherever you listen to your podcasts. This is the Total Saints podcast.
Now, we start, as always, with the shout-out to our Patreon community because their monthly contributions support our show. There are four tiers, ranging from £5 to £20 per month. And aside from supporting the podcast, each of the tiers has different perks. You get access to an ad-free version of the podcast. There's the exclusive TSP T-shirts, the FPL, and also some of the events we're doing. And as I alluded to last week, we're busy finalising the plans for a special end-of-season live TSP, which is going to be in a pub. We'll have more on that in the next couple of weeks. And if you want to get involved in supporting TSP each month, just head over to patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast for all the details. You'll find all the links in the podcast show notes and on the YouTube description. Now, there were 99 minutes on the clock when Flynn Downs scored to claim the win over Watford. 3-2, the final score. But does it keep the automatic promotion hopes alive? That was certainly all the talk leaving the ground yesterday. Alfie, I'm going to start with you. Get your thoughts on the game yesterday. It was not great for the heart, was it? We left it late, to say the least.
No, it was obviously a stressful one. But, I mean, to answer the question, is it back on? I think first to address that. Maybe there's a chance just because of the results elsewhere. I think it's certainly going to make it a more interesting end to the season. We wouldn't have predicted that, you know, Leeds, Ipswich and Leicester wouldn't, you know, barely get a result between them this week. To be very clear about what will need to happen for it to be back on, they're going to have to win all five of the games that are left. That's quite simple. And if they win all five, they need to hope that Leicester or Ipswich drop a result or two, basically. They'll definitely finish above Leeds if they do that. So there's every chance. But what they will do is they'll go into this this last period now with loads more confidence. But in both of the games, they started really well. Neither of them were a perfect performance. Started really well, got the, you know, the comfortable lead, and then just tailed off for some reason. And, you know, particularly against Watford yesterday, the second half or the period before halftime, letting them back in the second half as well. It wasn't brilliant. And Russell Martin was, you know, really quite frustrated at what it took to win yesterday. That being said, it's always the best way to win, and the, you know, the limbs were fantastic. It was a little bit contentious, a little bit controversial, and that winds people up as well. So, you know, all in all, it was a good week, a great afternoon at St. Mary's. But there's definitely things they need to improve on, and we know that.
Yeah, because the goal difference might come into play as well at the end of the season. Glenn, obviously we got off to the best start with the goal inside the first minute. Was it 57, 58 seconds? It was the perfect start, and I was thinking, right, here we go.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I think we said about Watford last week that when we've played them before, they don't look a team that's big on heart, really, particularly in the cup game. They kind of sacked it off as soon as we went ahead. So their defending was diabolical on, on both the first two goals. They didn't get out to Adam Armstrong at all. Obviously, no one marking Smallbone in the middle for the first goal. Second goal, they let Walker Peters escape from two men, I think it was, and then the guy sliced it. Brooks kept it in, Adam scored. So it looked like they were dreadful and couldn't really be bothered. But they've obviously got, you know, with their having got rid of the Valerian Ishmael, they plan with Tom Cleverley at the moment, till he gets sacked in a few weeks' time, no doubt. They had something about them, and to be fair, they were the better side for the rest of the game. You know, there were periods of the second half, maybe not in terms of, you know, creating chances in the second half. It was probably fairly even, but I felt that they were the better side in the second half, and I don't know if that was just me being very frustrated with us almost trying to force things. It seemed like, you know, we weren't knocking the ball around as well as we were in the first sort of like 25 minutes of the game, and Watford were getting closer to us, and we were trying to force it, and it just became a little bit tense. I thought there was all the passing around at the back was just a little bit more stretched, and then Bazunu would get a bobbly one played back to him and play an air shot, and we just about got away with a few things. But yeah, it was, I mean, we did step off the gas after we went 2-0 up, and this is a common theme, and when we do that, we're not good enough to keep teams out. I mean, it would be nice if we could have a duff 20 minutes and, you know, in yesterday's game, still go in 2-0 up. But we just don't seem to be able to do it. If we're not playing at 100% and looking to go forward all the time and put the other team under pressure, we let goals in. And it just seems to be, there were a couple of warnings before Watford scored, and they get that one before half time. I mean, the second half could have been different with the if Ryan Fraser's goal hadn't been wrongly, as it turns out, disallowed. It would have made everything that happened after it sort of like slightly irrelevant, and we wouldn't have all been having heart attacks in the 99th minute. But there you go. It was a good equaliser. Watford got, it was a very good finish by the lad to make it 2-2. And and then all the controversial stuff at the end, and for all Tom Cleverley's whinging and Daniel Backman's whinging and Ryan Portis's whinging, I really do not care one bit. You win some, you lose some. I don't think it's conclusively a handball, and I don't think there's any way a referee and a linesman are going to spot it, even if it is. So happy days. Let's have it. And if they weren't wasting so much time in extra time, then the game probably would have ended. But I think it was the first thing I got told when I started playing football about 50 years ago. You play till the game finishes. Why are you moaning about it? The time added on is just a guide. There you go. End of story. And we live to see if it's still on another couple of weeks at least.
Is it still on for you, Steve?
It's slightly more back on, I think.
So sitting on the fence. Well,
no one wants to say it.
No, I mean, I think you look at the bookies odds as an example. After, I think, ahead of the Coventry game, I think we were 16-1 to finish in the top two. We're now 13-2, so that's coming a lot. So the bookies are obviously looking at the form of all four teams, the sort of collective sort of bottle of certain teams who have clearly. I mean, you look at Leicester; they just look a team that are a bit of a shambles at the moment. Nobody seems to be happy with the manager, which is mad when you've been top of the league all season. And it just seems a very unhappy place, which given all the sort of financial uncertainty and everything else is, I guess, slightly understandable. But they've been winning games more often than not, and all of a sudden they're not. And who knows? I said probably 2-3 months ago, Leicester are still catchable. They've not been especially impressive. They've won games because they've got better individual players, but better individual players don't always win games. And now, maybe teams are starting to find that out and find a way past them. I mean, I sure as hell didn't expect Plymouth to be a team that would trouble them in that way. But fair play to them. And you look at Leeds and Ipswich. Leeds completely sort of dominant force at Elland Road all season. And all of a sudden this week, 0-0 at home to Sunderland and 0-1 at home to Blackburn, two teams who basically have had, well, certainly nothing sort of positive to look forward to for months. And yeah, I mean, they're kind of almost on Blackburn, probably even on the beach, even though they're technically still in the relegation battle. They've probably been on the beach since last week, I reckon. They've had some wins to give themselves a bit of breathing room. So yeah, it's teams losing games that they're not expected to lose. And I think that's kind of where the shock is. But why are people shocked? We've lost games we weren't expecting to lose. So it's just these little cycles that teams are having. It just so happens that those other three are having theirs right at sort of squeaky bum time, where at the end of the day, one of them, if they'd won three games last week, they'd be home and hosed. Mm-hmm. But they're not. So we fight on.
Tell you what, it was a good 10 minutes in the concourse, because I got there literally as Sammy Smodic scored. So there was the big cheer just as I was going through the turnstiles, and then it was quite an entertaining 10 minutes or so watching Leeds desperately dive around in the penalty area. Patrick Bamford, horrendous diving cheat. But they did, to be fair, they didn't really have a shot. They had a sort of goalmouth scramble, but that was it. And Leeds and Leicester both looked like they'd forgotten how to score. So, as we know, the hardest part of the game.
Do you see Patson Daka's miss for Leicester, where he's basically on the corner of the six-yard box and he shanked it kind of at the corner flag? It was just extraordinary. That just kind of shows the sort of moments you're in there. If Jamie Vardy's in that position, you would certainly back him 9 times out of 10 to be at least hitting the target from there. That was extraordinary. That
it does feel like the league that no one wants to win at the moment. Mm. So there's a long way to go.
I'll happily take the trophy. I'm happy to win that.
Well, at first or second, we don't mind. Alfie, an unchanged lineup from the Coventry game, which we will get onto in just a moment. Were you surprised by that? Did you think you might have rotated things a bit more just with the busy schedule coming up?
Yeah, to be fair, I was a little bit surprised, just because obviously two of the big names that have been left out on Tuesday, Stuart Armstrong, Jan Bednarek, you'd think that they'd be keen to get them back in. Speaking to Russell Martin after yesterday's game, he does sometimes make fibs, but he did say categorically there will be changes on Tuesday, there's going to have to be. But I think you see the effects of that, because people like Joe Rebo, even Che Adams, come off early in the match, and you lose to me when they come off, but that's just as a result of playing, so many minutes. So you lose those players. I don't know what changes he'll make on Tuesday, but I hope he doesn't do anything too drastic. You probably need to keep Cherdens playing for every game at the moment, even if it means bringing him off early and losing something at the end. So yeah, a little bit surprised. I think he still has a problem with the back line. I mean, a problem in a good way, because I think at the moment they're all doing pretty well. James Bree, although Glenn maybe not the biggest fan for some of his performances, but I think he's done all right. Jack Stevens is doing well. Taylor Bellis is obviously, the in my opinion, the best of the bunch, and Kyle's a no-brainer. But Jan Benrek's top player as well, so you need to find a way to fit him in somehow, or do you? So I think there's a few problems in the team there, but I wouldn't expect 6 or 7 changes. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised. I think Gavin Bazunu is sort of clinging onto his place at the moment as well, but I don't know if Lever. I don't know if we'll ever actually see a change there. But I think he just needs for himself just to step up a little bit, I think, and just whether it's just shot stopping or it's not a confidence thing. But it's just when you see the ball rolling past him, even if it is in the bottom corner, it can be it's obviously frustrating. Luckily, it didn't cost Saints. But the other thing was that Flynn Downs played on Tuesday with a knock. I'm pretty sure, and they had Shea Charles on the bench just in case he needed to come off, and then he goes and plays 99 minutes again on Saturday. So hopefully he's fine to go again and keep him fit and ready, because he's
Shea Charles wasn't on the bench yesterday, was he?
No, not yesterday. It was Manning came back in instead, which is why
we had the Stevens in midfield thing in the second half, because Charles wasn't there. And we were that was basically what caused the second goal. It was, Downs pushed further forward and Stevens at six, and they were positionally, they were all over the place on that second goal. So, I do sort of question that.
But he made the sub sooner, though, didn't he? Because that was one of, I think he was critical of himself in the Coventry game, that he didn't make the subs as quick as he should have done. It just seemed to me that I think it was just before the hour mark when he started to make the changes. And then we'd used all five. So
if you have a Rebo and Smallbone starting, they're going to get tired at roughly the same time.
Yeah.
And if you take the two of those off, you can't really bring on Stuart Armstrong and Rothwell, because it's two number 10s basically, and it's too attacking, especially when you're winning the game. So that to me was why he sort of took the decision to bring Bednarek on, and push Stevens into midfield. So he's, in theory, you've got a more solid, but it's a world of difference between doing what Stevens does from left back and turning up in midfield unexpectedly almost, than actually playing there and have to be that disciplined number six. So I don't know. I think that's something that maybe needs rethinking. I'd rather see Shai Charles on the bench because it, you know, he can he covers for Downs if he's injured, obviously, yeah. And he enables you if you're starting with Aribo and Smallbone, he enables you to still keep the midfield solid if you need to close out a game. But it's just a little thing, really.
The thing that Russell Martin says on that is that his answer is he wants as many attacking options as possible on the bench, but he doesn't bring on Adosie or Camardine anyway. And you know, if you're not going to bring him on, but do you need them? I mean, it doesn't look like Camardine's going to get anywhere near the pitch at the moment. So, yeah, I would probably keep Charles in my squad as well. I just think that there's no other player that's a direct replacement for someone like Flynn Downs in the team, and he is exactly that.
And a little reminder, Steve, about Ryan Manning. I think you can feel unlucky not to have been in the squad on Tuesday night, wasn't it? And then obviously coming on and getting the assist via the corner, albeit. But it was good. I think he's going to be key for the games that we've got remaining. He's still very much part of his thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, his impact was excellent, actually, I thought.
It was.
When he was only on, 15 minutes plus added time. But he was involved in everything that we did that was good in that injury time period. It was his cross for Adam Armstrong's volley that he kind of whacked down into the ground. it was his free kick that Bednarek, I think, got the header that was then deflected behind, and then it was his corner that was nodded down for the goal. So three sort of key passages of play from an attacking sense that we've probably not quite seen enough of this season when he's been in the side. I don't think, I mean, maybe it's just a case of, well, he's only on the pitch for, he knows he's only on for 15 plus stoppage time. So therefore he knows kind of what energy levels he's got for that period. And he's not kind of trying to kind of pace himself over a full 90 minutes perhaps. And therefore he was able just to sprint at everything really yesterday. But no, that his impact was excellent and vital, really, because I think without, I mean, while Bree was doing a lot of the overlapping runs, the ball was very rarely played to him, and we looked a little bit stodgy down that side. Ryan Fraser had a very peculiar sort of period on the pitch where, other than scoring that goal that was obviously ruled offside, he basically did nothing right, I don't think.
Stuart Armstrong was terrible.
Literally every touch was over hit. And weirdly, like he's obviously trying to play this wide role, and every time we had the ball and looking to play the ball wide, he drifted 20 yards inside. So we had nobody to pass the ball to out wide. And that was why people were getting frustrated, because we're then having to turn back and try to go the other side. And I don't quite understand why he was so central for that time where when he was on the pitch. I mean, obviously he was in the right place for the disallowed goal, but for the most part, when we were building up against sort of a wall of 9 or 10 Watford players, we needed to stretch the game, and him coming inside and leaving Bree as the only outlet out wide on the left hand side didn't help us at all, unfortunately.
I think we also had the worst case for backward pass so far this season as well. I think Flynn Downs is my man of the match by an absolute mile, but he had the ball in the centre circle and Adam Armstrong was bursting down the left completely free. And he went all the way back to, I think it might have been Smallbone or Bazuna, and then we lost possession. And you just think, he obviously just didn't see him. But in a game where there was a couple moments where I think a few fans got frustrated that the ball was going back, and you know, a couple of nervy moments, obviously Gavin Bazuna had the first one where he sort of air shot it and then was able to get rid of it as well. But that one, I was baffled by that. There was so much space for armour, but obviously just missed it.
We're still causing our own problems though, aren't we? That's the thing. Glenn, I was just going to say, Che Adams obviously doubling the lead, I think third goal in four games. You were talking about how important he is through the middle, and we just look at a slightly different team when he comes off, and it was again the case on Saturday, I felt.
Yes, it was. I'm being set up here, aren't I, to talk about his replacement, but I know what you're doing. I'm just repeating what I said last week. He's the best centre forward that we've got, and when he's not there, we're a worse team. It's not rocket science. And Alfie made an interesting point earlier on about, you know, do you have to flog him really, because it's such a downgrade when his replacement comes on, let alone start a game, or you've got to shuffle it and take Adam Armstrong out of the position where he's been so effective all season. So I don't really think there's an option other than to keep Che Adams in the side. It's not just the, you know, it's not just the goal output. It's just the, as Steve said last week, it's the occupying defenders being some sort of physical presence. When you look at what Watford had at the back, they had Porteous, Pollock, and Hoyt. Mm. They're all big units. Now you want to put Adam Armstrong up against them? No, you don't, because it'll just get battered. And Sekumara hasn't got the physicality or the ability to play against players like that. So, yeah, I think Adams, whatever your opinion of him is as a player, he's the best that we've got, and we've got to look after him and make sure he stays in the side. I mean, also, he's doing relatively well, bearing in mind, you know, the contract situation and stuff like that. Because you hear all the time about players, you know, mentally having issues when they're coming towards the end of their contracts. Some do, some don't, obviously.
Well, we had enough last year, didn't we? There was towards the end of the season.
Yeah, but I mean, what's so frustrating about Che is how inconsistent he is. Sometimes within the course of one game, he can look like he's never played football before, and then he's battering defenders around and scored a couple of goals. That's the frustration about him, but that's why he's playing in the Championship. That's why no one forks out 15 million quid to sign him to play in the Premier League. If he could play at his best level, you know, 90% of the time, as opposed to 40% of the time, which is kind of what he does now, then there'd be a player who would be playing at a higher level than the Championship. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to him next season with regards to where he moves, if he moves, you know, whether we offer him a contract. So it's been an uncertain time for him, I expect. But at the moment, he's the best we've got. And him being in the side gives us a better chance of getting promoted than him not being in the side.
Well, we do Player of the Week in just a moment. On Tuesday evening, we beat Coventry 2-1. The headlines were all about the other results going our way. Ipswich, Leeds, Leicester, all dropping some points. That was all pretty decent. I think the big thing, Alfie, was that it ended the three-game winless run. So that result, in a way, on Tuesday was kind of like the catalyst for the excitement yesterday, and that was a really important one.
Yeah, it was a good night as well. I mean, I've said in my summary for Watford that what I thought about the performance, obviously it was a brilliant start, and then, you know, tailed off, allowed Coventry back into the game. And the goal was a frustrating one because it's actually just a really good ball into the box, in my opinion. I know that Adam Armstrong has, Russell Martin said, he sort of stood up in the dressing room and took responsibility for that, because he looks over his shoulder and Jake Bidwell's there. And then by the time the ball comes in, he looks over his shoulder again, and he's completely gone. He's free at the back post and he scores. But they defended the box pretty well up to that point, Southampton, in my opinion. I think they've done a decent job, and it is just it's just a good delivery in. And then they held on. They showed a bit of steeliness, showed a bit of grit, and I think that's exactly what you wanted. The thing that I couldn't believe is that it's gone down as a Kyle Walker-Peters goal, the first one.
Well, I was going to say, who are we giving it to?
It makes no sense. It's one of these things that there is no debate. It doesn't make any sense. If the ball hits your teammate and goes in, it's their goal. That's always been the rule. When did that change?
When you consider that one at the start of the season, the Sheffield Wednesday one, where Teller had the shot and it hits Adam Armstrong on the fringe, basically, and it barely moves, barely deflects, and goes in, and he gets given that goal. Where's the consistency there?
Terrible career move for Nathan Teller, by the way. Topical news.
I mean, they haven't lost a game all season, have they? And they're going to potentially win three titles, because Liverpool aren't going to get to the final Europa League, which is good fun. They've had an absolute shambles. But yeah, I had the Paul Onuachu hat trick. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it from Genk.
Oh, the worst ever hat trick. Oh,
yeah. The worst hat trick in football history. Everything, yeah.
Yeah, I had a video of that ready as Che Adams' highlights package for if the third one went in, because both of his goals were terrible goals. But, you know, at the end of the day, they've got to go in. I enjoyed that. Like I say, it was a catalyst for this. And I think that, you know, nothing's changed from that. Results elsewhere and from this, they need to win every single game, but they're doing it so far, 2 out of 3.
I mean, it could have been very different, Glenn, after 10 minutes, but we saw probably, I mean, we've seen some bad penalties at St Mary's this season, but that was pretty bad, and obviously we were both down that end, and he just took forever.
What surprised me about it was the general rule seems to be in the Championship that penalties don't get given unless they're pretty obvious. you know, there seems to be quite a high threshold for actually giving a penalty. I mean, hence we've hardly had any this season, have we? Two or three, perhaps? You know, not that many. So it looks very, very soft at first view. And then you see it on the replay later and it's not a foul. There's no way it's a foul. And to be fair, the guy's not really appealing. He's just gone sprawling down.
Yeah.
And the referee's just decided for whatever reason that that's a penalty. So
he's always given it before the tackle had happened.
Yeah. Now, there was a tackle that Downs put in just before that, which was a bit naughty. So maybe he just thought, you know, I'm having him. It was a strange one.
I thought the linesman was going to overrule it because there was a bit of dialogue, a bit of conversation there, and you think, oh, he's going to overrule it, and then no, and then about 20 minutes later, he slips up.
Referee from Newport, Isle of Wight, by the way.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say something offensive about the Isle of Wight, then, but I'm not going to. So had you right, guys, to take the penalty, and he takes. The referee blows his whistle and he takes literally 5 minutes before he starts doing his silly little stuttered run-up. So the abuse he was getting was quite loud by that point, mainly from me. So I'm taking full responsibility for the fact that he then slipped on his backside and it got this, well, basically free kick against him for kicking the ball twice. So the fact it hit the bar was kind of irrelevant. So, very, very amusing. And That was the catalyst. Obviously, we played really well the rest of the first half and went in 2-0 up. And that, you know, obviously we let one in, but that was, looking back now, that was relatively comfortable, certainly more comfortable than the Watford game was. But quite an amusing penalty miss. We've had some funny ones at St Mary's, haven't we? I mean, I remember Harry Kane hitting one at the gas holders.
Harry Kane and Arta both skied them in the space of a couple of weeks, didn't they? They then replaced that square of turf a week or so later. There was a very obvious sort of big bright green square, like where you could see where they dug it out and replaced it. Because a couple of players had come across.
We had the Adam Armstrong one a couple of weeks back, didn't we? Where basically he kicked it twice, but we got away with that one against Sunderland, I think.
Yeah.
So more work to do on the. On the penalty areas next season.
It was, again, Steve, it was one of those ones where we've seen it many times, that, you know, really good first half, and we just couldn't keep those energy levels up for some reason. I just wonder whether the goals that we're conceding are going to come back and haunt us at the end of the season when it comes down to goal difference, because that's another one where that could have been a 2-0, couldn't it? You know, it could have been a 3-0 at the weekend as well.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, at the end of the day, if it comes down to it and we've missed out on goal difference, then... Yeah, I mean, there'll be certain quarters that will be saying, well, we've conceded so many rubbish goals this season. And a lot of it has been second halves. I mean, you look at our first half record compared to our second half record. Goals scored is kind of about the same, but the goals against, we've conceded a lot more goals in the second half of games, where essentially we seem to have this period, and it's usually only around 25 minutes to half an hour. But we have that period where we just the intensity drops. We sit off teams, or we either sit off, or the team, the opposition, kind of chooses to up the tempo a little bit and put a bit more pressure on us. And we're either not expecting it, or we're trying to quote unquote manage the game, and we kind of play ourselves into a little bit of a hole. We do this a little bit when we're kind of doing the little interchanges between the defenders and Gavin Bazunu. And I know that, I mean, people everywhere in the ground, you've always got someone within earshot who's getting really sort of antsy about it and sort of panicky. I mean, the players aren't under, they clearly are comfortable doing what they're doing, but there's quite often a moment in each of these games where we let the opposition have a sniff of it. And there's usually one moment where we've played our way out, but we've probably done so with the finest possible margin. And I think that then gives the opposition confidence that they can carry on doing what they're doing. All they've got to do is up it just that fraction more, and they'll put enough pressure on to force a mistake. And quite often the mistake doesn't actually come from us playing out from the back, but it then kind of forces us to change our mentality a little bit, because the opposition is is sort of slightly more in our face. So that's kind of where the challenge lies, I think. But in terms of goal difference being a problem, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it might cost us. But I mean, if we end with 90 something points and don't go up, and it's on goal difference, then we're going to have won 20 something games of football this season. It's what can you do?
I kind of feel like the damage has been done as well. Should we do player of the week before we move on to the two big games we've got coming up? I know we've been chucking a few names around. Glenn, who was the standout performer for you from the two games?
Yeah, difficult one. I thought Taylor Harwood-Bellis had a really good game yesterday, along with Flynn Downs. So Joe Rebo was good against Coventry, especially in the first half. It wasn't so great yesterday, so I think he seemed to be feeling the effects of the two games in 4 days or whatever it was. So, yeah, overall, I have to say Taylor Harwood-Bellis, I think.
Okay. Alfie?
Yeah, I think Flynn Downs' individual performance yesterday was really good, was tremendous. So I could go for him, but I would also do a bit of an overall contribution one. I'll go for Che Adams just over the course of the two games. Yeah.
Important goals too. Steve, any other names to chuck into the mix?
I mean, Alfie's named the two that I was going to pick, so... Walker Peters was very good on...
Do you know what? I was going to say Kyle Walker Peters coming back Tuesday, in as well for the two games.
A little bit quieter yesterday, I thought, but I think that was largely because most of our attacking was going down the other side. But it was interesting that we switched the fullbacks very visibly midway through the first half, because the lads down that side for Watford was actually giving Kyle a lot of trouble. And actually putting Bree on the left instead as a more sort of solid, steady defender kind of shut that down a little bit after they'd had that little spell, sort of 5 minutes where they created two or three pretty decent chances. But yeah, Walker Peters, excellent on Tuesday, I thought. Somehow has been credited with that goal, which, yeah, is mental. But yeah, stick him on the pole, I think.
So everybody apart from the man who got the stadium man of the match again yesterday, which seems to be a common theme. Every time they announce someone as man of the match in the stadium, they don't.
Who was it?
I think it was Will Smallbone.
Yeah, to be fair, he had a good game. He started really well. Obviously, the header was good, and I think about 2 minutes after that, he tackled someone on the edge of their box and set himself up for a shot. But he probably could have played that one across and for a second goal. But yeah, he made a good impact yesterday for sure.
We'll add him to the vote as well, maybe. So we'll get that on.
That's five players on the vote.
Can we do that? No, is there room for five? I don't know. I haven't done a poll for a while.
I'll have a look.
We'll stick to the four. We'll stick to the four. We'll keep it simple.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
On Tuesday evening, we host Preston North End at St Mary's. Now, this is the rearranged fixture following that fire on the industrial estate early last month. I think it was episode 268 that we spoke to Ollie, who was from the podcast called The Butter Pie Podcast. So we got a pretty good insight then. I'm just thinking, Steve, is this a better time to be playing them? I know they lost at the weekend, didn't it? So it looks like they're out of the playoffs and probably don't have anything to play for now. And I can't help but think that maybe we're in a slightly better place as well.
Yeah, definitely on both counts. I mean, Preston, as you say, lost at home to Norwich yesterday, 1-0. I mean, gave Huddersfield a hiding in midweek, but I think that's, you kind of take that on its merits. Also drew with Watford. And lost to Birmingham, so they've kind of stuttered the last three or four games really, and that's put them 8 points off the playoffs with four to play. So I think with the best will in the world, that's probably their season over, especially with their minus one goal difference. So yeah, I think good time to play them. Sounds from what I've kind of been picking up on Twitter that they may have sort of picked up a couple of key injuries. So as a result, they're looking a little bit disjointed compared to, say, 4 or 5 weeks ago when they were on a really good run and looking like they might push into that top six. So yeah, I mean, it's there on the table for us to take, I think.
So I know you mentioned it earlier, Alfie, but just so it's in the right bit on YouTube, are we expecting to see any changes? I mean, Russell Martin was kind of alluding to the fact that there might be a couple. It's going to be a big week with the game on Tuesday and then Saturday too.
Yeah, as I said earlier, he always, you know, sometimes he tries to throw us off the scent and say, yeah, we might have to change a few things, but he was very categorical this time that there will have to be changes. I think he didn't want to change the team from winning against Coventry to Watford. I think he wanted to keep that momentum, keep that flow. But I think in doing that, he's accepted that he will have to make some, on Tuesday. So the ones I mentioned earlier, the guys who, you know, they probably should be starting games anyway, and they probably would do in most teams, Jan Bednarek, Stuart Armstrong. Like, I would be very surprised if they don't come in. I think Brian Manning's in with a shout, but what you don't want to do is you don't want to make too many changes. So I don't think there'll be wholesale, you know, four, five, six. I think it might just be two or three. Those two guys coming in, and then maybe someone in for David Brooks as well. I think, you know, David Brooks has probably not taken the chance he's had to really nail himself down as the guaranteed third forward, because you're going to play Adam Armstrong and Chad Adams in the playoffs. That goes without saying. But there's a space up for grabs there between him, Ryan Fraser. You know, it would have been Sam Adosi a couple weeks ago, but he looks like he's a little bit further off now for whatever reason. So yeah, I could see Jan, Stewie and a third forward coming in, but I don't think it'd be too many more than that.
Brooks is an interesting one, isn't it, Glenn? We were having this conversation yesterday in the pub afterwards. He kind of came in and he had a lot to play for, and obviously there was the chance of Wales still going to the Euros, wasn't it? And it just felt like yesterday it's not quite the player that we saw or what we thought we might get from him.
There's a hell of a lot of ability there, but he does seem to have this knack, if you like, of disappearing out of games, where you don't notice him for half an hour. Yeah, I mean, I still think we're lucky to have him. And his goal involvements, I mean, he got an assist yesterday. I think he's possibly thought of a little bit harshly because he tends to disappear from games for half an hour. And it's the same with the other loanee from Bournemouth. Joe Rothwell is exactly the same. Mm. But it's less excusable for him because he's in the centre of midfield. You know, if you're on the wing and you don't get given the ball, then you're obviously not going to do much. But yeah, I mean, Brooks needs to get involved in the game more. But you know, as with any forward player, you need to be given the ball. I don't necessarily see him making loads of mistakes or anything like that. I think he's been okay. But his output has been okay, as has, you know, Sam Adosi, who's, as you say, has gone further down the pecking order. I'd certainly rather have Brooks in the team than Cameldine, simply because you're more likely to get a goal or an assist out of him. So no, I think he's been okay, all things considered. But I mean, you're with the best will in the world, you're not going to get a Premier League team, which, like it or not, that's what Bournemouth are. Mm. You're not going to get a Premier League team loaning you a player who's going to be a world beater every week. You know, he's not in their side for a reason. And I dare say it's because he doesn't put in many 90-minute performances, which is obviously what you need at Premier League level. But he's, yeah, I'm sort of like perfectly happy for him to be here. And I have no problem if he stays in the team, to be honest.
Does anybody want the opportunity to change their score prediction for this game, by the way? Because I've got the ones that we did back in episode 268. If anybody does, it means that we're going to have to redo the... We're going to have to redo the graphics from social media. I've got them here. It just needs a bit of work. So, Alfie, you had us down for a 2-1 win. Mm-hmm. Glenn, you also said 2-1. Steve, you got a 3-2 win down for this one. Ollie, who was with us from the Preston pod, said a 2-1 Saints win. Interestingly. And I went for a 1-1 draw. So I think I'm going to change that maybe to a 3-1 perhaps. Or maybe 1-0. I think we'll definitely win. Are you all right with yours, Steve? You all right with the 3-2?
No, I'm going to change that. No. I think this is the time where we get a clean sheet against someone vaguely competitive. 2-0.
Okay, so the new graphic is on. If anyone's watching live, by the way, do stick your score predictions in the comments. After that, it's a trip to Wales on Saturday to face Cardiff. I mean, a comfortable win back in December. I think 2-0, wasn't it, Steve? Two goals from Adam Armstrong. Depending on how we get on Tuesday, you know, another game against a team who, well, they're 11th, nothing to play for. So could be similar to Watford. There's a chance there for us.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Cardiff are interesting in that, yeah, they're... kind of comfortably in mid-table, absolutely no danger of being relegated. I think they're 15 points above the bottom three, only 12 off the playoffs, and yet they've got this ridiculous minus 12 goal difference.
Yeah.
So basically when they lose big. So, yeah, I mean, as you say, nothing to play for there, but they have won 18 games this season. So they're no mugs. They beat Ipswich fairly recently. So, yeah, they're not going to be a pushover, but yeah, you would all, I think in our situation, I think when you've got something to play for at either end of the table, what you want to be playing is teams that are in mid table who don't really have an awful lot on their plates, other than kind of assessing who might be suitable and who might not be for next season. You don't really want to be playing the guys at the top because naturally they're the best teams. You don't really want to be playing the guys at the bottom because they're all scrapping and anything can happen in a one-off game against those guys, as we've seen. So yeah, I mean that the bottom, the last two relegation places are like that fight is just looks continually mental each week, and the changes. I mean, even in injury time on yesterday when Bristol City got that 101st minute penalty against Huddersfield, that threw everything out completely from the way it was looking.
Good decision that was, wasn't it?
Jeez. Oh, that was wild. Yeah, about what you were saying about penalties having to be clear cut in the championship.
Yeah. Mm.
But yeah, I mean, it's these things happen. But yeah, I think Cardiff are kind of exactly the sort of side we want to be playing. Really, they obviously have, as I say, they've got their threats, but they certainly concede enough goals that we should be looking to get through them relatively comfortably. We just got to take those chances, which obviously Blackburn, we didn't create an awful lot, but the handful of chances we created were pretty good and we just didn't take them. So yeah, we got to kind of get over that hurdle again.
Yeah.
My only danger with Cardiff is, and Nick's actually put it in the comments, that they will have that motivation of wanting to do Russell Martin in and sort of ruin his day. I think there's a genuine
but they lost 4-4 against him when he was Swansea, didn't they?
And of course he had his little moment at the end, didn't he, Alfie?
Absolutely.
At St. Mary's, and he called his 10 seconds at the end when he was enjoying that win. So he'll want to win this one as well, won't he? Because as Steve said, 4 games I think versus Cardiff, wasn't it? When he was Swansea manager, he won all of those. Won the one at St. Mary's as well. So he'll be up for this and he'll get them up for it.
Yeah, it'd be a good atmosphere. And like I say, they don't need any more motivation because they simply have to win every game to achieve their goals. But yeah, I do think Cardiff will be up for it. I don't think there'll be any mugs, as you said, Steve. But I think you'll see in my prediction when it inevitably comes that I do fancy Saints. That at this point, you have to win every game. So I'm going to be backing them to win most of them for sure.
Glenn, what are your thoughts on this game? Because I was reading about the criticism for their manager. Apparently, it's been a bit boring at home and things aren't great. Yeah. And they're not sure whether he's going to be there next year. So you kind of think like an early goal could be key.
Well, surprisingly, we're playing against a team that's still got the same manager that they had when we last played. Errol Bullitt, who apparently is a bit of a confrontational character, shall we say. And he's when you read sort of like opinions from Cardiff fans on their team, usually the word lackluster, dull, boring, they're the ones that sort of come up. So it's not looking great for his long-term career prospects at Cardiff, put it that way. So hopefully we find a team that's kind of on the beach a little bit. Little reference to Russell Martin's swim away character there.
They were beaten 3-1 by Millwall on the weekend, which is a shocking result. I know that, to be fair, Saints were beaten by Millwall as well.
And we don't know what we're going to get. As Steve said, they got that win against Ipswich where they scored twice in the last 90-plus minutes, didn't they? So they've obviously got something about them when they want to have. I guess I'm just hoping that, you know, given that we're a few weeks further on now and a bit closer to the end and there is absolutely nowhere they can go in the table that's significant, that they turn up and phone it in a little bit, especially with the manager probably being on his way out in the summer. You know how some players' minds work. So we can't worry about them. We've got to do our job. I'm kind of reluctant to talk about this game too much because obviously if we don't take care of Preston,
then it's not back on.
It's not, and it totally changes. We're in the absolutely in the last chance saloon. We didn't expect to be even have this opportunity after we got beat by Ipswich. But I mean, in the last two game weeks, we're the only team that's won. and we've won twice. So
it's that, you know, it's so that Simpsons meme, isn't it, of Mo throwing throwing Barney out of the pub, and he walks back around, and he turns around and Barney's back in the bar again.
Yeah, it's weird how it's gone. And
I've got a feeling Leicester play West Brom at lunchtime as well on that Saturday.
That's a huge game.
Yeah, but again, you know, we'll know that could be more motivation for us. So.
Yeah, and if that ends in a draw or you know, then it's all continuing to go well. But we have to take care of our own business. So with regards to Cardiff, we beat them very, very comfortably at St Mary's. They didn't have anything. Hmm. I think one miss from, I think it's Carlin Grant. Had one bad miss, but other than that, they did absolutely nothing, and it was an easy win. So hopefully we can go there and do the business, but we have to take care of Preston first. Obviously.
Would you like to go first with your score prediction, then, Glenn?
Oh, go on.
Okay, what, for Cardiff?
Yeah.
Go on then. I'll have a 3-1 win.
3-1 win. Right, sorry.
This train of positivity. We're going to win both games.
No, I was just going to say, I've remembered now why I don't really know about Cardiff, because I did the game earlier at St Mary's the season as a fan, and I sat in the itching northern corner. I don't think I looked at the pitch more than a few times. I spent most of it winding up some of the Welsh fans on the other side, so I realise now. I'll give my score prediction. I'll go for a 2-1 win again.
All right, all pretty confident, Steve.
Yeah, Glenn's already gone with what I was going to go with. It's good to reciprocate every now and then. I mean, it's just got to be a win, hasn't it? And 3-0, why not?
3-0, okay. Again, if you're watching along live,
two clean sheets in a week.
Do put your score predictions in the comments. Just before we finish, not much in the way of any other business this week, apart from the club announcing a new kit deal for next year. Alfie, do you want to tell us a little bit about that and where we are? Because I saw you breaking the news today that you know that it's going to be a red and white stripe kit next year.
Yeah, go on, Alfie. You're in the know. You tell us about it.
Mr.
Influencer.
I'm wearing my limited edition Puma top right now, which I know
I guess ours is still in the post.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not sure we'll be getting that.
If you're an influencer, can we get you in a boxing ring with Mike Tyson?
Depends on how much you pay me. I'm not sure. Yeah, like obviously, it'd be Puma. That's the cat's out of the bag there. And I think, you know, it's not a massive revelation that we're going back to the red and white stripes. I think it's a welcome boost. You know, that kit is not going to be revealed until the summer. But just I've been spent a lot of time at the training ground recently, the interviews, games, and stuff like that. So I've just heard about that. I know Russell Mine wanted Puma. I'm very happy to be the recipient of a very nice T-shirt that's wound a couple of people up. And thanks very much for the club for that.
Yours is in the post, Glenn, I'm sure. You know,
absolutely. Look forward to it.
They're waiting to send you the shirt. That's right. You'll get the home kit. You'll get the away kit. You'll get the third kit. You get them all.
Wait.
You get them all sent out to you. Alfie, the other story this week was the one about Russell Martin being sued by Swansea. And he suggested he was surprised that it had taken this long for the story to come out. What was the latest on that? It all sounds a little bit odd to me.
Yeah, it's a little bit bizarre, isn't it? I think so. Obviously, we have to take ourselves back to June last year. There was obviously a big dispute between Swansea and Saints about the amount of compensation that they had to pay to release him from his contract. And I think this is due to a different clause in his contract that was, if you were a Premier League team, you had to pay around £2 million. And if you were a Championship team, you had to pay maybe around half of that. And obviously, Saints had been relegated, but the Premier League's AGM hadn't happened. So there's a dispute over whether they were a Premier League or a Championship team. And, you know, at this point, no one knows if they agreed to a compensation deal or not. Presumably not, because Swansea City are now suing Russell Martin, and they have been for the whole season, for a breach of contract. So, look, we know no more about that. It's obviously a legal matter, and Russell didn't say much about it, but he did say that it's not been a distraction for him. It is what it is. And he did suspect that, you know, it's the owners of the club rather than Swansea themselves. He has no bad ill wishes for the club. It's just the people above the club. And he does think that maybe it's a little bit personal as well. So, yeah, it's a strange one. You don't hear stories like that very often. And maybe we're going to have to go to a court somewhere in South Wales, and hear how it's settled. A weird one.
I don't think I've ever heard a story like that, Steve. I mean, managers jump ship, get tapped up, move from clubs all the time. I don't ever remember a club trying to sue a manager for leaving and going somewhere else.
Well, I guess the question is, I guess from Swansea's perspective, if they can't get an agreement with Saints, then they have to kind of go after Russell. And I'm surprised there's not kind of some FA process that would kind of arbitrate this. But I mean, I guess it's a legal matter, so off to court we go, maybe. I mean, I kind of always think these things are always likely to be settled out of court eventually. Quite often the day before, or even the morning of the case, because ultimately nobody wants to be pitching up in court and revealing private sensitive data to the public. So yeah,
it was all quite messy, wasn't it? As Alfie says, yeah, it was quite messy back in the summer, where we knew he was coming, and then we just had to wait for forever. It seemed like, before they confirmed that he was going to be taken over.
Yeah, it was all a little bit weird. Took far longer than I think anybody would have liked. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think it was always going to happen. It was just a case of kind of getting it to a position where Swansea accepted that was going to happen, and then kind of deal with the fallout later. But yeah, I mean, American owners, they're fond of their day in court, aren't they? So it's one of the biggest industries in the US, isn't it? The legal business. So yeah, I mean, we'll see how that pans out. But I mean, it doesn't appear to have been affecting him all season, so I don't see it having any material impact now it's come out in the wash.
Yeah, fair enough. That's pretty much it for this week's episode. Don't forget, you can follow Total Saints Podcast on all the social media platforms. We are at Total Saints Pods if you want to find us on there. You can drop us a DM on any of the socials, or you can email us via the website if you've got a question, maybe something to share, or you want to send us some free t-shirts. That's also fine. And don't forget to check out the new merch store as well, which is shop.totalsaints.co.uk. There's some new bits being added there all the time. We're also on Patreon. That's where you can support the podcast with a monthly contribution. It's patreon.com/Total Saints Podcast. There are four tiers on there, ranging from £5 to £20 per month. And each of the tiers comes with different perks. There's weekly shout outs for the patrons in our Francis Benali and in our Mick Shannon tier. So thank you to Dave Melton, Mark Atkins, Andy Hollis, Anthony Thompson, Saints in Exile, Gavin Ford, James Harron, Nikki Nicholson, Southampton NY, Drew Dyer, James Kibbe, and Mike E. They're all in our Francis Benali tier. And also a huge thanks to Colt Baker, Dave Ernst, Berger, Ed Busy, Nick Higston, Phil Cook, Nick Reed, Paul Stewart, Phil Horstrop, Matt Hall, and Mark Littlewood, who are in our Mick Shannon tier. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Alfie. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will see you again on Sunday evening at 7:15 for our next live stream. Have a good week.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.